It is an honor to gather and worship with you all at Skagit Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Thank you so much for the invitation and especially for the grace in allowing me to join you through Zoom instead of in person. Have you ever heard the term tree hugger? In popular culture, it is sometimes used as a way to describe environmentalists and those advocating for a more sustainable life. Well, I'm a tree hugger in the very literal sense. I love hugging trees. I will walk up to a tree, and usually the bigger the better, spread my arms wide and lay my cheek on its rough bark, close my eyes and lean my weight into the trunk. How did I start hugging trees, you may ask? Well, I have found that hugging trees has helped ground me, both literally and figuratively. It started a few years ago when I was in therapy and I had a particularly challenging session. I was crying and crying, and at the end of the hour, it was at the end of the hour, so I couldn't stay much longer. My therapist told me to go outside and hug a tree to help ground me. Now, initially, I did stop crying because I thought, huh? Hug a tree? However, I was so distraught that I did go out and find a tree. And this was in the middle of an office park in Bellevue. I will never know what people looking out their window that day may have thought of this person walking up to a tree and hugging it. But at that moment, I will tell you I did not care. Because as I had my cheek on the bark and my arms around this tree, I felt calmer. I felt my body release the tension it had been holding. Ever since that day a few years ago, I go out of my way to hug trees as often as I can. Sometimes I can't fully hug a tree because of wherever I am, or maybe the tree is not quite big enough to hug, or because it maybe it's high on a hill. But what I will do, if I need the proximity of a tree, is I will place my palm on the tree and give gratitude for that tree, all trees, and for nature. Now, trees, along with all living things, are an integral part of our humanity's very survival. A few years ago, I learned more about trees and how they communicate with each other while, as I was listening to a podcast. This podcast spent the hour talking about how trees communicate through a vast and quite literal web underground. Through a complex root system, research is finding that includes fungi and mycelium and other living organisms. These systems talk to each other. It is truly remarkable and almost miraculous. Environmental scientists have long been studying how the health of individual trees impact the systems that they are part of. In fact, when one tree is sick, it is through these root systems and mycelium that they talk to each other and even try to nurture the tree back to health. Shortly after learning about trees talking to each other, I learned about the book Emergent Strategy by Adrienne Marie Brown. Brown is a Black activist and author, and if you have not read the book Emergent Strategy, I highly recommend it. The book is inspired by the work of the first Black female science fiction writer, Octavia Butler, and specifically the book Parable of the Sower. Adrienne Marie Brown uses the lessons from the book to hopefully inspire humanity to social change and to better care for each other through connection. She writes in the book, quote, "In the framework of emergence, the whole is a mirror of the parts. Existence is fractal. The health of the cell is the health of the species and the planet. There are examples of emergence everywhere. Birds don't make a plan to migrate, raising resources to fund their way, packing for scarce times, or mapping out their pit stops. They feel a call in their bodies that they must go, and they follow it, responding to each other and each bringing their adaptations. There is an art to flocking, staying separate enough not to crowd each other, aligned enough to maintain a shared direction, and cohesive enough to always move towards each other, responding to destiny together. Destiny is a calling that creates a beautiful journey. Oak trees don't set an intention to listen to each other better, or agree to hold tight to each other when the next storm comes. Under the earth, always, they reach for each other. They grow such that their roots are intertwined and create a system of strength that is as resilient on a sunny day as it is in a hurricane. End quote. And Brown goes on to ask, quote, how can we, future ancestors, align ourselves with the most resilient practices of emergence as a species? Many of us have been socialized to understand that constant growth, violent competition, and critical mass are the ways to create change. But emergence shows us that adaptation and evolution depend more upon critical, deep, and authentic connections, a thread that can be tugged for support and resilience. The quality of connection between the nodes and the patterns, dare I say, love. And we know how to connect. We long for it. End quote. Now, the ideas in emergence strategy are not necessarily new, in that indigenous populations for thousands of years have learned from nature and how to live in balance with the earth and the living beings that provide water, food, and shelter and air. The consequences of our modern world, and specifically the violent, extractive capitalist society in which we now exist, is our disconnection from nature and our disconnection from what keeps humanity alive and thriving. Evidenced by the fact that even discussing climate change and how to mitigate our harmful impact continues to be controversial. Learning to live in balance with the one and only planet in which we need to survive should not be controversial. Talking about the ongoing horror and genocide is controversial because there has been a disconnect between our humanity and the humanity of others. I have been observing in the past few years, especially, how much it would serve humanity to expand our imaginations, both with what is happening now and how we could live. I came across what is quickly became one of my very, very favorite books. The book is Undrowned: Black Feminist Lessons from Marine Mammals. The book came about when its author, Alexis Pauline Gums, a Black woman writer activist, posted on social media what she was learning about different marine mammals from two guidebooks: the National Audubon Society Guide to Marine Mammals of the World and the Smithsonian Handbook, Whales, Dolphins, and Porpoises. Now, as she was reading these books, she found that while these books presented themselves as neutral observations, they often, almost 100% of the time, were reflective of patriarchy, heteronormative ideas, binary, and ultimately other limiting notions that were projected onto what, upon further study, are deeply complex and remarkable mammals that live in the oceans and seas. Her posts became viral and caught the attention of Adrienne Marie Brown, who invited Gums to write a book expanding on her learnings. Gums describes herself as a queer, Black feminist, love evangelist, and a marine mammal apprentice. Throughout the book, she dives deeper, see what I did there, into not only the observables of what the nature books have reported, but also what they mean, and adding more nuance to the story of why, and one of connectedness beyond our imagining. Here are the chapter titles. Listen. Breathe. Remember. Practice. Collaborate. Be vulnerable. Be present. Be fierce. Learn from conflict. Honor your boundaries. Respect your hair. End capitalism. Refuse. Surrender. Go deep. Stay Black. Slow down. Rest and take care of your blessings. Each of these chapters offer lessons from the magnificent and awe-inspiring lives of marine mammals, those that know how to keep themselves hidden from the forces that would destroy them, to those who sing to their offspring while still in the womb, and there is evidence that the song represents their name, and their parent and community learn their name and sing it to them as they grow. Nature is teaching us in the most unexpected ways. While scientists have predicted rising temperatures, floods, and fierce storms, I don't think anyone could have predicted the ways that the animals themselves are responding to the irresponsible behavior of humans. Have you heard about the orcas? The ones that have been charging into boats and disabling them. For those of you who haven't heard, there have been reports of orcas attacking boats since 2020. As reports grew more consistent, scientists started paying attention and studying their behavior, trying to understand why. The prevailing theory from an online source called Live Science is that, quote, researchers think that a traumatic event may have triggered a change in the behavior of one orca, which the rest of the population has learned to imitate. Experts suspect that a female orca they call White Gladys suffered a critical moment of agony, a collision with a boat or entrapment during illegal fishing that flipped a behavioral switch. Orcas are social creatures that can easily learn and reproduce behaviors performed by others, according to a 2022 study. In the majority of cases, orcas have made a beeline for the boat's rudder and either bitten, bent, or broken it. Scientists know that orcas are emotionally intelligent and not only care for their children, but are fiercely protective of them. Scientists are unclear if this behavior at this point continues to be a grudge held or evolved into some sort of game that groups of orcas have learned. Let's disable the boats kind of game, their version of tag, who's to say for sure? Now here's how Gums in the book Undrowned tells the story of orcas. Quote, if you let them tell it, before 1970, the orca, codenamed Blackfish, were despised. Military bases had guns pointed toward the water to kill them on sight for no nourishing reason. Teenage boys shot them with 22s and slashed them with knives and let them slowly to die, painful deaths. And the adults in their communities applauded them for taking down a giant pest. Post-1970, if you let them tell it, thanks to Oceanarium marketing, orcas are loved. Meaning featured on posters made into stuffed animals, starring as main attractions at SeaWorld, marketable captives for capitalism. Loved. I advocate for a different definition, Gums continues. I would say the orca before and after 1970 are influential. In matrilineal, multi-generational groups all over the planet, orca families influence all the other species in their range. They inspire seals to move onto land. They impact the migration of animals as varied as moose and humpback whales. In truth, the orca is a large dolphin, but there is no species on Earth too large to fear her and give respect. Orcas greet each other respectfully as distinct groups and celebrate their own social order. They collaborate on the care of their young. They are not afraid to express their grief for months and years in public. Yes, I would say the orcas are powerful, influential, necessary, nuanced, and majestic, brave, and committed. Those are the words I would use. End quote. Gums writes with respect and care for the orcas themselves. And one of the saddest stories last year was the orca that was meant to come back to the Coast Salish Sea and died in captivity. Throughout her book, she tells the stories of mammals through the lens of community care and liberation. Now, I know that at least one, if not more, of you know a lot more about the behavioral science of marine mammals and are thinking about all the ways that these creatures of the sea behave badly and hurt each other. And I am not here to argue the idea that every other animal on Earth lives in complete harmony with each other. I will argue that none of the violence between animals comes anywhere near the horrific destruction caused by humans. One only has to witness the horror and atrocities happening right now in Gaza to know how destructive humans are towards other humans. I certainly had hoped that humanity would learn our lesson that destroying each other does not and will never bring peace. Humans hoard resources and wealth and create stories about who is worthy and who is worth less. And these are stories. And stories can and are often changed. Stories can be told to affirm life and affirm sustainability. Listen, learning how to be human is a messy business. None of us are experts at being human, not even faith leaders. The best we can do is hold each other when we are struggling, try to understand and have grace with each other, love each other, celebrate with each other. We can tell the story that we can transform the world in service to sustainability and community care. It is not impossible. I refuse to believe it is impossible. When I pontificate at dinner parties about such ideas, and I promise you that I do, I am sometimes met with, "Aisha, you're talking about utopia. There is no such thing and it's not realistic." To that, I always say, "Why is the damage we have caused realistic? Why did someone say, 'Let us own other humans,' and that became a reality? Another said, 'Let us cage children,' and that is exactly what we do. Why isn't it realistic to tell the story of transformation for the good of all? To tell a story of universal healthcare and universal basic income so that all may have what they need? Why isn't that story realistic? We are always free to write a different story and make it a reality. We do not need to continue the destructive path that settler colonialism has taken us. I was walking with my neighbor a few years ago, and we were talking about prison abolition. The Church of the Larger Fellowship, of which I am part of the lead ministry team, has an immense prison ministry. If any of you want to become a pen pal, let me know. I'd be happy to let you know how to do that. We have 1,700 incarcerated Unitarian Universalists who minister to each other. And we have about, 30 or 40 new who join almost every month. And I was telling my neighbor, I am a prison abolitionist. I do not think we should cage humans. And then he said, well, how would that, and always people say, how would that work? I said, well, if we start with universal basic income and universal health care, we will begin taking care of each other. And he turned to me when he said that, and he said, that's not realistic. He said, that's complicated. I said, you know what's complicated? Maintaining the International Space Station, but we find the money and the resources to do that. Sharing is not complicated. We just don't want to do it because we tell ourselves a story. I've also heard the story of, what about handouts? I said, what's wrong with handouts? Why should only trust fund babies get handouts? Why is generational wealth okay, but helping each other who, by the luck of the draw, did not get born into privilege, why is that unrealistic? Let us tell a different story. I'm going to leave you with the guide for diving deeper from the book Undrowned and lessons in the voice of the sperm whale who can dive more than a mile deep. A guide for diving deeper. One, breathe. We sperm whales can replace 90% of the air in our lungs with one breath. We can blow our breath 17 feet high. However deep you are breathing, breathe more and exhale longer. Two, take responsibility for your forehead. We, for example, have a head full of wax we can solidify like a weight to go deeper. We can melt it to become lighter than water and float. What is going on in your head? Be intentional with it. Three, we stretch our bodies 60 feet long at the surface and then arch our backs facing down. Our tails come with us, barely creating a ripple. We are saving our energy for depth. This is not the time to splash. Four, be flexible. Deep in the ocean, there is pressure, a lot of pressure. It will press on your chest and your lungs will collapse. You call it heartbreak. It is not. It is how what made you embraces you, reshapes you, welcomes you back. Let it happen. Five, be specific in your actions. When your lungs collapse, you will need the oxygen in your blood. It is deep in your muscles. It was put there by practice. Let your practice facilitate depth. It will be there when you need it. Six, listen. We listen underneath our throats, not with our ears. We listen across the planet. We can hear each other click from opposite sides of the globe. Though we may seem alone, we never are. And seven, come back. You will know when it has been enough time in the deep. It can vary. Attune to your need. Account for your nourishment. Direct your thoughts. Melt them down and make them light and return. As you go about your lives this week, remember to center the stories of community care, love, and abundance for liberation. Amen, Ashe, and blessed be.